We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL insider.
As much of an incredibly giant bag as he is, ooh, Rodgers was right. They owned the Bears.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
Guys, I hope everybody knows that I consider this fun.
Good.
Hub Arkish.
There's no question in my mind that if that's what Hub reported, he heard it from the horse's mouth, that I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, I've worked with Hub for many years. I wouldn't question his take on any of it.
Hub Arkish, not getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Hub will be joining us in a little bit, and when he will, that segment with him is going to be brought to you by the Marquee Sports Network. Watch Bear Essentials Tuesdays at 7 p.m. only on Marquee. Eddie Jackson felt bad and did not enjoy the fire Matt Nagy chance. That's among the things we will talk about with Hub, who joins us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Good afternoon, Hub. How are you?
I'm doing good, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. So how did that go over to the assembled media, as Eddie Jackson kind of put a human side on how that feels as players if you're playing hard for a coach and the fans are chanting that they want him gone?
Well, I mean, as far as how it went with the media, it was fine. You know, we're not in there to really have a reaction one way or the other. I think, you know, people have tried to report it as fairly or you know, and as accurately as they can. And, you know, the reality is, as somebody who's been in the room for pretty much all of this, there has never been any indication that Matt Nagy has lost his locker room or his team. Not anything that any player has said, not anything that we've seen. And that's what Eddie was talking about. You know, I mean, he wasn't saying, oh, you know, it makes us sad or anything like that. He was making the point that, you know, we're playing for the guy, and you know, let us play it out, and we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. What is the scenario? Is there a scenario other than Justin Fields coming back and playing great and them ascribing that to Matt Nagy? Is there another scenario in which Matt keeps this job, Hub?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously there is the scenario that they win five or six games, which yeah. I don't think is going to happen, you know, and I don't think anybody else does either. But that's the first one. And short of that, you know, there's been so much damage done at this point that regardless of what Justin Fields is doing, I think it would be tough. You know, the problem, Matt, is that I have it out from pretty good sources that George really has not made up his mind. You know, the report last week, that absolutely was bogus. That's not them trying to, you know, rewrite history or anything like that. My guess is that if George knows what he's going to do, the only person who knows is Ted. And I don't know. You know, he said the last time we heard from him was January 11th, I believe, that as long as they showed progress, that's what he was looking for. The other wild card here is that we don't know if Matt's contract expires this year or next year, you know, and the assumption is that it expires next year. So I'm sure there's a scenario or two out there that I'm not aware of, but right now I think he really needs to focus on winning football games if he expects to be back.
Forgive me if you've commented on it, but the idea, Pat Manley had said yesterday on the show that he thinks one of the things that's in play is the possibility of Ryan Pace becoming sort of the football czar we've all talked about them needing, and Champ Kelly becoming the GM, somebody who's already there and has made some appearances on behalf of the team and is, and I'm sure who you know, Hub. So what do you think, is that in play as something that could happen? Ryan Pace elevated to the football version of Ted Phillips and then actually hiring a GM underneath him?
I think it's quite possible. You know, obviously Patrick is well wired and is hearing it from people, you know, close to the situation. All my sources are telling me that while nobody is sure what Matt Nagy's status is at this point, that they think that Ryan Pace is safe. And I know there's a lot of, you know, well, I shouldn't say a lot of, we never know what the percentages are, but there's Bears fans out there who don't want to hear that. But everything I'm hearing is that Ryan's pretty safe. And you know, I don't know that it would really require a promotion. It might just require a new title. That was what they envisioned when they hired Ryan, 7 years ago, is that he was their top football guy. And Champ Kelly is somebody who is well thought of, you know, in NFL circles and certainly here in Chicago. So it's a logical, I don't want to call it a projection or prediction, but it's certainly a logical possibility that Pat is hearing.
Hub Arkish with us here on The Score. All right, onto the field, Hub. You wrote about them being just one game out of the playoff spot. I think they're technically 14th right now in this crazy ass conference, but they are. Have you crunched the schedule and looked at the possibilities here? I know you wrote about it for ShawLocal.com.
Well, yeah, and actually, you know, Matt, this is the frustration we all live with in our business these days, and the crazies on social media, and certainly, you know, I'm talking about the crazies listeners here at The Score. If anybody read the column, the point was that statistically they're one game out of the playoffs. You know, I think I gave three or four reasons why, you know, I don't believe it's going to happen, but that's where they're at, you know, and so it plays to, you know, our opening line here and everything that's going on is that there are six games left in the season. You know, it's a full third of the season is left, more actually, technically, if you want to do the math. That's where they are. You know, they're one game, you know, right now, 5-6 with tiebreakers gets you in. And then you get all the goofs who saying, well, but yeah, with the tiebreakers, that, you know, they got to jump over everybody. If they win four or five games to get into the race, the tiebreakers all change. The reason they're struggling with the tiebreakers right now is because two of their four wins are over AFC teams, but they're done with the AFC now. And the teams in front of them that they could end up tied with, I know some of them, not all of them, still have AFC games left. So all of that is in play. At the end of the day, I think we're going to know in the next 2 weeks. They've got to win one of these two games against Arizona or Green Bay for this to be an even vaguely realistic conversation. I'm certainly not predicting that based on where we're at today. But there are a few other wild cards, not playoff wild cards, but things to consider. The Justin Fields thing is interesting to me because he broke his ribs a week ago Sunday, and everywhere I've looked, it is up to 6 weeks to fully heal broken ribs. Now, guys sometimes come back in 3 or 4 weeks, but you'd have to be insane to rush this kid back out on the field with broken ribs. So I think, you know, unless I'm missing something, we're going to see Andy Dalton probably in both these games. And we've seen signs that the offense does run more efficiently under Andy Dalton. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. I think they probably hope to get Allen Robinson back. I think had they had Allen Robinson, they almost certainly win that Baltimore game the way it was going. So, it's all out there. And we have to be able to have this conversation without people thinking that, you know, you're defending anybody or you know, making excuses for anybody. These are just the realities of where they're at. So Arizona is the best team in the NFC. They're the best team in the NFL right now at 9-2 record-wise. And so this would be the biggest upset of the season if the Bears could handle them Sunday. And, you know, now they play the game and we'll see what happens.
It's interesting that there's so much vagueness to Justin Fields' health because, I mean, I've heard it. Because it's interesting because day to day is the official designation as of right now, right, Hub? But you're right about the history of rib injuries, of course.
Well, that's why yesterday I went out of my way with Matt. You know, I wanted him on the record to clarify because the last week when he was asked, was it bruised ribs or cracked or whatever, he said, I think they were cracked. And I don't know if there's a difference between cracked and broken, but I asked him specifically yesterday and he said, yes, he did break his ribs. And so, you know, you can list them day to day as much as you want. And you know, I'm sure there's different levels. I don't know how many ribs he broke. You know, I don't know whether they're displaced fractures. I mean, there's all kinds of things that come into play here. But this isn't about whether the kid is tough or not. We know he's tough, and we know, you know, he'll want to go out there. But what is the upside on that and risking, you know, a more serious injury? And by the way, and he's not going to play to his ability, which is the whole idea of having him out there in the first place, which is to develop him. And so the main thing is to get him healthy. Now, I am not a doctor, and I know it doesn't mean he's out 6 weeks. But, you know, anything less than three or four, I've tried to go back and look at other instances of quarterbacks with bad ribs. And unless you're talking about some guy trying to be a hero in a playoff game or to win to get into the playoffs, you know, without being at least 2 or 3 weeks out, it just doesn't make any sense. And then you see what happens.
Tevin Jenkins has until Monday to be activated. You think they'll activate him before Sunday? And does he get any snaps, maybe special teams? I don't know. How do you take a look at Tevin Jenkins at this point?
Yeah, I don't really, you know, I don't think we have a clue. Again, we didn't grill him. I mean, we asked Matt, you know, a number of questions about it yesterday, and he was, I think, fairly straight with us, saying, you know, we just haven't seen enough yet to know. They like what they're seeing, but, you know, what can you really do? There was no practice between the Ravens and the Lions games, and so they brought him back in an interesting window. At this point, it's not the end of the world if they don't bring him back. I mean, it depends on what you're doing. Are you going to sit down Jason Peters, who's your best offensive lineman right now, regardless of what you're playing for? If Fields is out there, you want to protect him, you know, while you still are in this window where you can claim you're competing for a playoff spot. I don't think you're going to sit down your best offensive lineman to take a look at a rookie. So my guess is they'll activate him because they don't know what happens in the next couple weeks. And once that window closes, he's done for the year. So I expect they'll activate him, but I don't think we'll see him until at least after Green Bay. And at that point, we'll pretty much know, regardless of whether they've been mathematically eliminated or not, you know, that they either have a chance or they don't.
Yeah, that'll clear things up. And then I wonder if, like, my God, can you imagine week 14? Let's try out the rookie left tackle with Justin Fields coming off broken ribs. You know, it's like that doesn't feel great.
No, it feels terrible. But here's the other thing, Matt. They don't have to start him at left tackle.
Right.
They can play him at right tackle. I mean, everything I've seen so far, and we just didn't see anything of Tevin Jenkins, but I'm not uncomfortable with the idea of teaching Larry Borum the left side. He has really impressed and surprised me with his athleticism and his feet and the way he's changed his body since they drafted him. And I am not you know, out here on a limb by myself. There's much smarter football people than me that are telling me the same thing. They may have their bookend tackles, but it could very well turn out that it ends up with Borum on the left and Jenkins on the right, because when Jenkins was drafted with the 39th pick, when they traded up to do that, there was some, you know, applause and credit for that move because they thought he was the best right tackle prospect in the draft. So I could see activating him, letting him sit for another week or two, see how things play out, and then, you know, if you're worried about protecting Fields, if you're still trying to win games, you know, maybe you let him, you know, take some reps away from Borum, you know, and just, you know, to get him on the field. So my guess is that's the most likely scenario. And then again, if they lose the next two, particularly if Fields isn't out there yet, or if they say Fields is 100% and he is out there, then you go ahead and get him some game action and see what you got.
It's interesting. Speaking of Bears and offensive linemen, this news, the Chiefs activated Kyle Long off the physically unable to perform list today. He's on the official roster of the Kansas City Chiefs today.
Well, what's really interesting about it is they only do that because they're getting ready for the playoffs. I mean, you know, that team quietly has won four in a row. They're back to a game behind the first seed Baltimore Ravens. And what really stunned me working on them the other day for the Pro Football Weekly TV show, writing the script, their last three games, they have allowed, I'm going to get close, I may not get this exact, 7, 14, and 11 points. And that was with the worst defense in the NFL prior to this four-game losing streak, winning streak, I should say. And so, not only did they start winning again, but they've obviously straightened some things out with the defense. Now, I still don't think it's a great defense, but if that defense is going to play like that, they're a legitimate Super Bowl threat. The offensive line has been a concern. Some of the inconsistent play of Patrick Mahomes is because they tried to rebuild that line on the fly. And, you know, Kyle Long, if healthy, we know what he is. And so if they activated, this is not like Tevin Jenkins, if they activated him, they intend to use him. And I think that's great. I can't wait to see Kyle play again. I'm curious, you know, a year away and the body change and now putting the weight and the muscle back on. We know what his temperament is. We know what his athletic ability and his talent is. So I think that's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, good for him. He's a guy to root for at this point. In that same division, what a missed opportunity by the Chargers, Hub. They were 4-1. Sitting there in first place, the Chiefs are struggling. They go 2-4 in their last six. I can't take them seriously, I guess, at this point, as they go back and forth week to week.
No, I mean, what they've got is they've got a brilliant young quarterback. He's got some really nice weapons in Austin Eckler and Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. But the defense is terrible, and that's kind of ironic because that's what Brandon Staley, you know, was hired for. Now, that's not his fault. He inherited this roster and this talent, and they're going to have to obviously make some upgrades during the offseason. But, you know, Herbert keeps him in every game they're in, every game they play. Not so much Denver last week. That was just an off week. But, you know, they're still in the thick of it. Matt, everybody's 6-5. 5-6. I mean, you know.
I'm six and five, Hub.
You know, at this point, you know, never has it been more relevant to find the team that's getting hot. Now, Tampa Bay is getting hot when you see them going into Indy and coming from behind like that. Clearly, the Patriots are hot. Indy was hot until they blew that lead. The San Francisco 49ers are getting hot. The Packers have stayed hot. You know, those are, and the Chiefs, you know, those are probably the teams that if we're looking for who's the best and who's going to be there, you know, the last couple weeks of the playoffs, those are probably the teams to keep an eye on right now.
Congratulations to your Michigan Wolverines, Hub, for that dominant performance. Was that, I hope you were settled into a comfy chair watching that because it was so clear cut. It must have been fun and satisfying.
Thank you, Matt, because it was. I talked to Bernsey about this yesterday. I don't remember the last time that I sat down, and I always record games because I don't like watching commercials, and I just wait 45 minutes, and then I, you know, get through it. But this one, I sat down at the kickoff, and you know, I was a fan. You know, I didn't have to analyze anything. I stayed away from Twitter, just watched the game. And I really, I'm obviously a Michigan alum, biased, you know, no question about that. But for anybody who didn't have a rooting interest in that game, it was a great football game.
I mean,
you talk about everything that college football should be. You know, and the fights breaking out and the officiating calls, and then, you know, two great teams. Listen, it's okay to be a Buckeye and hate Michigan and to be a Wolverine and hate Ohio State. But one of the things that I enjoyed about that game is Stroud and Henderson and those three wideouts. Those five are all special. They're all going to play on Sunday. You know, this was just Michigan was a better team, and Michigan is so, you don't realize it. You know, Aiden Hutchinson and Ross and Haskins are going to be gone, but it's a really young team, and so, you know, not only has Harbaugh changed the conversation in Ann Arbor, their arrow is really pointing up regardless of what happens the next few weeks. Now, you know, it would be so Michigan now to go get beat by Iowa, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, God.
But I'm not resting easy until we get through Indianapolis Saturday night.
That was a great college football game, and you had the trash talking with the coach and Jim taking a shot back at Ryan Day in the post game. I like Jim. I don't know him. I know you do know him. I enjoy him. He's obviously a little kooky, but I think it's in mostly a really good way. Do you think, will he ever come back to the NFL, Hub? You think?
You know, yeah, we've texted back and forth a little bit after the game. I'm not bugging him on the phone. You know, he's got plenty in front of him. He has not told me this, but I've known him for a long time. My first year in the Bears broadcast booth was 87 when he was the first draft choice, you know, and he actually, as a rookie, bought a townhouse less than a mile from my house, and the relationship has gone on through the years. He is a little kooky, but a lot of that is actually that's intentional. That's planned. He is not nearly as you know, different as a lot of people think he is. He's the most competitive human being I've ever met, Matt. And so, my prediction would be, if he wins a national championship, and I'm not saying they're going to do that this year. But I think he's settled back in at Ann Arbor right now, and I know he would be happy if he just retired there. He could put in 10 more years, win some Big Ten titles, hopefully, you know, do well, and then retire. But if he wins a national championship in the next couple of years, I have little doubt that there would be the urge to try and come back and get a Super Bowl ring, too.
What's the fit like here? What's the fit like in the NFL and the fit like here? I sure loved what he and Greg Roman did with Kaepernick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it depends on when that happens and, you know, what jobs were there. I can tell you that he's always, you know, felt good about his Chicago experience. I don't know how he feels about, you know, ownership in the organization. I do know that. I think, you know, he respects ownership, but, you know, the organization, I'm sure, would be a little scary. But again, think about what I said, the most competitive human being I've ever met. He'd probably, you know, enjoy coming into a situation people consider difficult and winning, you know, because of it. Don't forget, when he was at San Francisco, that ownership group was about as screwed up with the York family as any we've ever seen.
Yes, it was.
And it's actually the reason he left, you know, at the end of the day. So it's all timing. You know, he's not, again, unless they win the title this year, and I don't know that anybody's beaten Georgia. I don't even know if they can get by Alabama. But short of that, if the job opens this year and he was to win that national title, he's got to win a Big Ten championship first. You know, Michigan has not won a Big Ten championship since they went to the two divisions. And so it's premature right now. But I do think if, you know, if the stars aligned perfectly and at the time that he was had the urge that the Bears job was open, I think it would be a definite possibility.
Yeah, it's going to come down to Jim Harbaugh and Pat Fitzgerald fighting it out for the Bears coaching job. That's just the way it feels all of a sudden. Hub, and congratulations, your Cubs made some signings. Yan Gomes, Clint Frazier, everything's all right. They're doing fine.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm frustrated, man.
I know.
If $140 million is all Javi got for 6 years, I love Javi Baez, but I didn't see him as the linchpin that they had to bring back. So it's not, but I mean, it's hard to understand. You know, they claim that they're trying to compete. They claim they're trying to do this now, and yet most of what they do doesn't say that, you know? So we'll just have to let them breathe and see what happens.
Thank you, Hub. Talk to you soon.
Matt, take care. You got it.
It's Hub Arkish right here on 670 The Score. Let's dive into the college football coaching changes stuff. I have lots of thoughts on Javi Baez and a lot of the other baseball stuff that went on, and we'll get to that later on in the show. It's Spiegel Solo on Parkins and Spiegel. Adam Kramer, Kegs and Eggs from the Bleacher Report, will join us next, talk a little college football here on The Score.
Other than retiring from your current profession, could you see yourself leaving Notre Dame of your own volition?
No. I mean, look, I think Mike Tomlin had the best line, right? You know, unless that fairy godmother comes by with that $250 million check, my wife would want to take a look at it first. I'd have to run it by her.
Well, I know it's all whatever he says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then.
There's an MJ quote from The Last Dance for everything, people. 670 The Score. It's the Parkins and Spiegel Show. Been a long time since I talked to Adam Kramer. Kegs and Eggs on Twitter. The Spiegel and Golf Show used to talk to him all the time. Hello, Kegs, or is it Mr. Eggs? What do you prefer these days?
A little older now. Not wiser, but older. So Mr. Eggs is fine, I suppose, these days. Good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, you too. Mr. Eggs joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. All right, so coaches lie. This is not new. I was saying earlier, I was a producer here at The Score when Gary Barnett left Northwestern for Colorado. And people like were freaked out because he didn't talk to the team. He just kind of bailed. Now that the transfer portal is immediate and players can transfer and play right away, it seems like the disgust is diminished a bit. Do you feel that way? Are the players treated a bit more fairly in these scenarios at this point?
Well, certainly. I think the two, and it's been a chaotic 72 hours. I don't really recall 72 hours in the sport quite like this after a great weekend, but coaches are going to leave. There's no good, clean way to leave. When someone offers you 10 years and $100 million, whatever you want to say, however you'd handle it, and there's no good way to handle it. Brian Kelly probably could have handled it better if we're getting the reports out of Notre Dame that we are, but there's no good way to do it. The fact of the matter is players have something they can do about it now. The transfer portal is more accessible. They can leave without sitting out. You're seeing a lot of players across the country do that. Of course, Oklahoma, the story when Lincoln Riley left was the decommitments and, of course, the transfer portal becoming active. So, yes, I think players getting more power does help you stomach these situations. And yet the discrepancy in money and the way that these contracts are heading when you've got a coach at Michigan State making $100 million, there's still quite a discrepancy there. So it's jarring. It's abrupt. and a lot more programs have a lot more money to spend. So I think it's headed towards this really interesting arm race that at the moment doesn't appear to have a ceiling.
Does Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame, Adam, for the SEC, tell us as much about the importance of the Fighting Irish as a powerhouse as it feels like? You know, like I'm tempted to talk about it in that way, and that's probably, I'm wondering how true you think that is.
I think that you can look at it in a few different ways. Lincoln Riley may not have wanted to go to the SEC, right? Oklahoma's going, and so he said, I'm going elsewhere. Now, he's sort of denied that, and we're kind of loosely connecting those dots. But Brian Kelly was in a position for a long time, and sometimes and we don't know the exact the total amount of the deal. We do know $100 million, $95 million over 10 years, and the incentives are probably pretty wild. It could just be that. Right, it could just be that someone offered him an insane amount of money. He wanted to make a change. It didn't sound like it in his press conference that you played that he wanted to make a change, but maybe he did and decided, I'm going to see what I can do with the maximum talent around me. That job, LSU, and I've said it throughout the year, you've won with multiple coaches. You've got great facilities. You're surrounded by talent. He's going to be able to unlock whatever greatness there is in Brian Kelly and his ability to develop and attract players. We're going to find out because you can unlock it at LSU. Maybe he just had that moment where he realized, I want to see what's out there. Or maybe somebody just gave him $100 million and said, I'm going to do that. Regardless, Notre Dame is a wonderful job. I don't necessarily think that changes much. I think it's a superb job. The landscape is changing. SEC is building a super conference. The money is going to be exorbitant that they're going to get. But I don't necessarily think the negative takeaways to Notre Dame here. That's not my takeaway. It wasn't a $250 million check that he talked about, but it was up there. It was pretty close.
Mm. You know, the whole system is still so screwy timing-wise. Like, the idea that Luke Fickell might have to decide between coaching Cincinnati as they finally make the college football playoff, assuming they win the conference championship game, and taking the Notre Dame job, that's not fair to do to coaches on the way up, nor is that fair for players. It's like, what's the precedent here? Is there a way that he could coach in the playoffs and still get that job?
By the way, remember when we got mad at players for sitting out bowl games like a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Like Christian McCaffrey sat out. We were all mad about it.
Yeah.
Now we have two teams, potentially Cincinnati and Notre Dame. Things have to break that way. You have two teams that are connected that could be without coaches in the playoff. The things shake the way out. So it is the landscape is changing, and you heard USC talk about, well, they didn't know if they were going to set, you know, they didn't know that they were going to change things like they were. And I'm paraphrasing, but these are unique opportunities. Is this going to become the norm though? Getting back to your original question, I think that's what I'm curious to. The playoff should mean something. And I think it does. Or maybe everyone out there, Brian Kelly included, Luke Fickell, is just looking at Georgia saying, I'm going to pass. Because that's kind of how I feel about it. Maybe they feel a little bit differently. But the financial opportunities, and that's what it comes down to me, are so great that I think that more than anything, as money is just pouring into this. A year after the pandemic, and we talked about programs cutting different sports, et cetera, a year removed from that, at least for them, that seems to be the most jarring thing is the fact that, again, back to Michigan State, a Michigan State can pay a coach $100 million. And that means LSU can pay that and then some to get a great coach to come coach that football program.
God, it's all crazy. It just feels so sordid. It really does.
It is. It's jaded, right? It feels weird. They're outpacing NFL coaches now. But you've had some hires here that are going to really flip things. So I don't expect that you'll have playoff coaches leaving every year. That's not going to become the norm. And by the way, what are they going to have to pay Saban and Kirby Smart now? Like, what is Nick Saban's worth? If Mel Tucker is worth $9.5 million,
oh my God,
that's a blank check for Nick Saban.
Yeah. Well, that's probably what's going to happen. I saw that the I don't know whether it's the Chancellor of Oklahoma or the Emperor, I believe is the exact title. He had said that about Lincoln Riley going to USC, quote, we would have liked a little more notice, unquote. Is there any responsibility at all for these coaches? Do they owe the university anything that they are leaving at that point?
Oh, Oh, you mean the guy that negotiated the exit from the Big 12 overnight into the SEC
yeah.
without telling anybody would like a little bit more notice. That's rich coming from him. Do they owe it? Like,
no.
Here you go. Is
no.
there a moral obligation? No. Look, if we were in that position, you or I are in that position,
yeah.
we would probably feel some the heartstrings would be pulled at what you're leaving, of course. And I think the coaches feel that. But somebody gives you this opportunity, and you got to go. And look, Oklahoma did the same thing, to jump to a conference that's going to pay him a lot more money annually to play football there.
Yeah.
And strangely, that's how they're in this position to begin with, I think. So it's – man, it's been a weird year.
Yeah, we would have liked a little more notice. All right, last thing. That was my first live experience with two-point conversions for the third overtime, the Iron Bowl. That was my first live experience after watching so much of that game, and it was so incredibly unsatisfying. What is the better option if you have one in your back pocket, Adam Kramer?
Well, first and foremost, God bless you for missing Illinois and Penn State.
Yes.
Because that was way worse.
I know, so that's what I've heard.
Be happy you were shielded from that. I actually thought that the original, how overtime is, before we go to the two-point conversion fest, was fine. What I'd like to do in college is move it back 10 to 15 yards, with the field goal kicking being as erratic as it is, and I think that's kind, frankly, to college kickers, move it back 10 to 15 yards, start a little further away and begin it that way, because the 2-point conversion is odd. It's disruptive. It's you have a game like that, which wasn't particularly well played, but was memorable and mm-hmm. was exciting. And it deserves a better, if we're going to do that, like, let's just trot field goal kickers out there. And that will be compelling too, because compelling doesn't make for satisfying. And I completely agree with you. It's one of those instances that college overtime, as it was, that LSU-Texas A&M game from years ago where they scored a bazillion points and they changed it, that's one of the more memorable games of the last 10 years. I think we could still be conscious about player safety and yet maintain, like, the integrity of overtime in college football, and it feels like we've lost some of that.
Yeah, it's a good one. So just move it back a little bit for that first attempt, and fewer teams will be able to automatically score, and they'll probably yep. end a little bit earlier. I like
correct.
It.
Correct. That's it. To be honest, I think college overtime as is, and you get it for two overtimes, is solid. It's compelling.
Yes.
It plays into the imperfections of teams. Having a good kicker matters now, or at least it should. It was not broke. I didn't think we needed to fix it.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. All right, Adam, thanks, man. Nice to reconnect. We'll do it again.
Sounds good, buddy.
All
take
right,
care.
You got it. It's Adam Kramer from the Bleacher Report. Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to do it. I was thinking instead of just the 2-pointer, you could have him at the 10 or the 15 or something like that, but then it still might be too easy for some of these powerhouse teams. All right. This has been a crazy show. There's been a lot of stuff going on. I feel like, there's been some news in the baseball universe that we got to process. We've done some basketball, done some college football, just did a little Bears with Hub. There's 3/4 of an apple pie still sitting in Shane's office. I believe as anybody had that. I made it myself, and then I put a Trader Joe's label right on top of it, and it's still, I believe it's still available.
I don't really support Big Apple Pie.
it's really good, though. I mean, yeah. If you like apple pie.
I do.
I don't love apple pie. That's the thing.
But you have to have those few days after Thanksgiving where you shut down the carbo loading and all this crap food. Otherwise, you're just going to roll that into Christmas.
Yeah.
By the time New Year's Eve rolls around, you can't fit into your suit.
Interesting. And the suit... What kind of suit are we talking about?
I don't know. If you're going out to like a nice New Year's Eve like
okay.
hotel party kind of thing.
I thought you meant like a Santa suit.
No.
Gotcha.
No, if I was wearing a Santa suit for New Year's Eve, then we'd have a problem.
Yeah, we do.
It's after Christmas.
Yeah, it's already bad. Oh, by the way, I owe you an apology.
Yeah, you do.
I owe you an apology,
about
sir.
What this time?
I owe you an apology because yesterday you asked me, and we did an impromptu segment of Ask a Jew, and I was talking about Hanukkah and the candles. And you asked me, do you want to rephrase what you asked me?
Yeah, so I asked you, with the menorah Jewish candles, when you leave the house
yeah.
or when you go to bed at night,
right.
do you put the candles out? And you jumped down my throat immediately I was assuming you were putting 8 Bed Bath & Beyond candles out on top of your menorah.
8 giant Fraser fir candles.
Yeah.
Like they're, you know, thickly or, you know, it's all burning down. I laughed at you.
You did.
I condescendingly chortled in your very direction yesterday. And then I realized you don't know that Hanukkah candles are just little itty-bitty things. They're not birthday candles. They're a little bigger. They last about 40 minutes or so. You were thinking of like a big, like white taper candle.
Right, because I've seen those candles before on menorahs and social media.
Yeah, those are probably like official synagogue menorahs. Or
it was a rabbi, so that would make sense.
Was it really?
No, I don't know.
You follow a lot of rabbis?
No, I try to avoid them as much as possible.
Hey, that's well, so do I actually. But yes, so the big ones, on a Friday night, we're supposed to light those two candles, as we are in the middle of another impromptu Ask a Jew segment. If anybody has any, feel free to text them at 312-644-6767.
What circumcisions? Where are you guys at on that?
Give me a minute. Let me answer the candle one first. The candles are, they last several hours. So what used to happen in my house is that you leave them in the sink. If you're leaving the house or if you're going to bed, you put the candlesticks in the sink. You make sure that it's not too close to the cabinets that might be above the sink. That is a dangerous situation. But you let the candles burn all the way down to the sink because it is theoretically a sin to blow them out.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. I feel satisfied with that answer. I'm glad that you looked at it a little bit more objectively time instead of just
assuming. I spent a lot of hours shaming myself and feeling bad about the way that I hopped down your throat in that regard. In terms of circumcision,
yeah,
it's a big ask. It's a big, big ask.
I heard it's not that big of an ask.
Well, it depends. If you do it on the eighth day, like you're supposed to, it's actually a very small ask. You're right. It's a horrifying, horrifying thing to be near. One time, I was an assistant at my nephew's circumcision, where I was what's called a sondek, right? And I was the guy. I held some gauze that was soaked in Manischewitz, and I could put it on his gums as literally the only bit of anesthesia that this eight-day-old boy was allowed as the moil sliced off his foreskin. And he shrieked like an eight-day-old in the worst pain that they will ever experience their entire life. And my sister left the room, but he got through it. And now he's the play-by-play voice of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps.
Nice.
And I will lord that over him forever. I was at your bris, dude. You know what? I held back. I didn't put the gauze in your mouth right away. I let you feel that pain a little bit before sweet, sweet Manischewitz anesthesia.
I want to talk about Brian Kelly being a bad guy. Man, oh, man.
That was me. No texts of note here for Ask a Jew. I guess that's it. I guess that's the whole segment. We'll come back and do team of the moment. Yeah, I got a team of the moment for you. And we'll talk about the big Bulls win last night as well. We'll do that next on 670 The Score.
The Suns built multiple 20-point leads. Nets made it interesting with one run in the second, one run in the fourth. But Phoenix able to hold off Brooklyn and win its 16th straight game. 113-107 the final. The last time the Suns had a winning streak this long, Steve Nash was their point guard.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eye.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns are the team of the moment. Who wins 16 straight in the NBA? It's tied for the 24th longest winning streak in NBA history. The Warriors won 24 straight to start the 2015 season when they won 73 games. The Lakers won 33 in a row in 1972. I don't remember that. I'm not quite that old. They've gone almost a full calendar month without losing, while the organization is in turmoil at the top with an apparently racist and misogynistic owner being investigated. It's a great big three. Chris Paul is ageless. Devin Booker is killing it as a scorer. DeAndre Ayton still getting better in the middle. And it's a roster that went to the finals and do not think they're going to coast until the playoffs. They're number two in team defense during this winning streak. They have internal accountability. Chris Paul says this, quote, "When a guy is not where he's supposed to be on defense, we let each other know, 1 through 15, unquote. They're really, really good again. And oh, by the way, tonight, The Suns against the Warriors at 9 p.m. on TNT. I'll be watching. Let's tweet through it a little bit together. Steph Curry versus Chris Paul. The Phoenix Suns, team of the moment, right here on 670 The Score. We segue comfortably back to Ask a Jew. Don't you think, right? Doesn't that make all the sense in the world? You go right from team of the moment to Ask a Jew?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, alternate names for Ask a Jew, by the way. The More Jew Know, which is pretty good.
We can't comment on how good or bad these names are, so just keep going through them.
Okay. Learn something Jew every day.
Again, can't comment okay. one way or another.
I like that one.
Yeah, I like that one, too.
Yeah, well, it's because you
why
said it.
Why can't we comment?
I don't know.
Why did Tanny say we can't comment on the Jew
remember,
segment
He's the keeper of the dump button. He's the adult.
Well.
He's the adult in the room.
Let's understand the rules. Let's still have fun.
Let's understand what the rules are.
Yes.
Let's do it the right way. Let's still have fun.
Yeah. Okay, so some good questions coming in via text. Is the dreidel game considered gambling? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And my kid, he dominated dreidel 2 nights ago. And was lording it over me. Got up like, woohoo, feeling good. As he got all the Hanukkah gelt.
What is the what's the dreidel game?
The dreidel game, it's a top. It's a little spinning top.
Yeah, I know that.
And it has four little letters on it, and it mean different things. And you pass out chocolate coins amongst everybody, and you essentially play poker with a spinning top.
Like
a
left, center, right. Or center, left, right, whatever you want to call it. That dice game with the quarters.
Sure.
All right.
Sounds good.
It's the
Sounds
Catholic
good.
Version of the dreidel.
This guy said, what kind of bacon-wrapped delicacies are served during Hanukkah? Really, sir? This for Ask a Jew? No, we don't eat that. Here's one. Question for Ask a Jew. Who is the front runner to replace Matt Nagy? That's technically a question you could ask anybody, but it does work here. I would say, I'm going to go ahead. It's a good question. I'm going to go ahead and say Byron Leftwich.
Okay.
Of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
From the 309, why do you wear such a tiny hat, and is there a tiny hat rack?
It's called a yarmulke. It's a fun fact. It's transliterated, which is like translated from the Hebrew as yarmulke, Y-A-R-M-U-L-K-E.
Dump them, Tanny. We don't know what that means. We have no clue what that means. It could be anything.
Is that some sort of signal out there for someone?
Yeah, trying to round them all up and send them on the attack.
They're coming. They're coming now. We're going to take over the radio station.
Paul Revere's out there on a horse.
We're gonna take over the media.
You already have.
I know. That was the bit. That's where I was
going.
Oh,
Mitch hates this, I bet.
Oh, it's possible. Here's one. Do you own a tiny hat? Yeah, I wore one last night. I have the one that I had for my bar mitzvah, as a matter of fact.
I just did that one. That's the 309 with the tiny hat.
Oh, yeah.
Hat rack.
What's the deal with the tiny hat? I said, what's that thing Jews put on the front door? You mean the thing on the door jamb? It's called a mezuzah. Again, that's my signal word.
God bless you.
Thank you. Mezuzah. And it's inside the mezuzah, which is on the door jamb, is a copy of a prayer. From the Torah, and every time you go in and out of the house, you're supposed to kiss your hand and
it's like
touch
a Notre Dame sign,
right? Like play like a champion today.
It really is. I never thought about it. It's exactly what it is.
The more different we are, the more we're all just alike, right?
It's exactly what it is. It's the Notre Dame sign, or what's that rock that they touch at Auburn or Alabama or something? I don't know.
Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, yeah. He's just standing there at the door, and everybody who walks by has
Wouldn't
to
you touch him.
Him
if he was just standing
oh,
there?
Damn right
God,
I would.
Imagine what that guy's arms feel like.
Oh, I want to know. Did you see him give a truck to that dude the other day, Dwayne Johnson?
I did. Why did he do that, though?
I don't know. I couldn't figure that out. I saw he gave the guy a truck.
Confirmed via text, Mitch does hate this.
See, I'm not going to read that one. I can't read that one, and I also won't read that one. Let's see. Not going to read that one. Other than Koufax, who's your favorite Jewish athlete? Oh, that's a good question.
Do you put up blue Christmas lights for Hanukkah?
Sometimes, yeah. I have Hanukkah decorations and Christmas decorations living in blissful harmony at my house right now. And the kid, he gets both, baby. He gets, you do a present every night. He's doing another present tonight. He's very excited. Got himself a Transformer last night. Grinder.
That's a pretty good pretty good present.
What, a Transformer?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a real deal. That's a real deal present. That's like a $57 present.
And they get better or worse as the nights go on.
They're supposed to start good, get really bad in the middle.
I got
to
tell you, I'd change that game plan up a little bit.
But then it gets good again at the end. That's what we usually do. But, I was the youngest of five kids, meant there were seven people in the house for eight nights of Hanukkah. I received and had to give 48 presents as a child. So literally it got to the point where, like, all right, here's a piece of Hubba Bubba to my sister one night. Like, here you go. I got you a piece of Hubba Bubba.
At what point did you tell Ruben that the Jewish version of the Tooth Fairy wasn't real?
I didn't. He's still, it's only the listeners that I shared that with. Ruben still totally thinks it's a thing.
Oh, but no.
Your callback is forcing me to reveal it again. Good job.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. He's exactly right. Big, big night for the Bulls and the Big Three. Why? Why? I'll tell you why. And you'll hear from the people involved. Coming up next on 670 The Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.